Chapter 1. First Encounters. Robert is lying in bed. He's 34, tall, handsome, with dark hair cut into a short contemporary style that says, I'm smart and I'm sexy as hell, and a body that's fit, toned and virile. His sleek, king-sized bed, with a stylish chrome headboard and perfectly white Egyptian cotton bed linen, is built for maximum comfort. His penthouse apartment is in East India Wharf on the river, close to Tower Bridge. He loves the spectacular views from his floor-to-ceiling windows across the Thames, which have the wow factor. He especially loves the effect it has on those who visit, as they gasp in admiration and awe. Robert is not alone. He looks over with appreciation at the blonde beauty slumbering beside him, glowing after their orgasmic experience. He smiles, thinking to himself that he still has the magic touch, and is clearly irresistible to women. 5 hours ago, she was with her friends in a city bar, and now, here she is, yet another willing and totally satisfied conquest. He could have slept with any of her group, but he chose her, as she was the prettiest. He gave her a 9 out of 10. He never slept with anyone below an 8. But he sighs, it was almost too easy. He looks down at his Breitling Bentley black watch. Damn, he says under his breath. It's 2:30 a.m. He has an important defence case the next day and needs to be on top of his game. Hey, beautiful. Time to get moving. He picks up his iPhone and speed dials his favourite cabbie, who only works nights and with whom he has a special arrangement. He trusts him implicitly to look after his women and be discreet. He pays him handsomely for his efforts with a monthly retainer and a generous fee for every journey. There are many of them every month. Robert knows he can always rely on him. Hey, it's me. Can you be here in 10 minutes? The lady's going to... He gently gives her a nudge. Sorry, sweetie, where is it you live? The girl rolls over and looks up at him, surprised. Oh, I thought I could just stay here and we could do that all over again. She wraps her long legs around him and tries to kiss him. He gently pushes her away and unwraps her legs. Not tonight, Josephine. I've got a big day tomorrow. So where are you going? She sighs and rolls her eyes at him. Shoreditch, she says huffily. Shoreditch, mate, she'll be down in 5. He grabs her clothes off the floor and playfully throws them at her. He kisses her on the forehead. That was amazing. But if I let you stay, I'm not going to get a wink of sleep. And you don't want me to lose my case tomorrow now, do you? And, he kisses her again, you are just way too tempting. Okay, she flutters her eyelashes at him. Am I going to see you again? Robert had decided that this one was worth seeing again, so he needed to keep her sweet. You sure are, babe. Soon. And don't worry, the cab's on me. The buzzer goes, and he gently nudges her towards the door. He picks up her Licenza G-string and hands it to her. Here, I think this belongs to you. She looks at him wide-eyed and pulls her skirt up provocatively around her waist, showing her black lacy underwear. They're not mine. Oops, they must be the cleaners, he says cheekily. She grabs them off him. They're pink, lacy, and very, very small. Obviously not your average cleaner, she grins. He laughs. Nope, but she does a very good job. Yeah, I bet she does, she replies. She kisses him seductively, but briefly, and with a swish of her long blonde hair, she walks out the door. See you around. I'll call you, he calls out. She doesn't even turn her head as she steps into the lift. Sure, whatever, she laughs. Downstairs, this cabbie, who only ever works in Zone 1 and possibly 2 at a stretch, is waiting in his black cab, listening to Jazz FM. He sees the strikingly pretty, tall blonde step out of the building and smiles to himself. Lucky bloke, he's done all right for himself tonight. Shame he always has to get rid of them in the middle of the night, though, he thinks to himself. Where to, princess? Shoreditch, she says sheepishly, and gives him the address. They drive away. Nice-looking girl. Glad she's not my daughter, he mumbles to himself. He glances at the small picture of his family in the front of the cab and sighs. Zoe is lying in bed. She's 29, 5'6", slim, shoulder-length brown hair, big blue eyes and flawlessly porcelain skin. She's quintessentially an English rose. Her white wooden bed, with the cream upholstered headboard, is covered in fluffy and silk patterned cushions in shades of cream, silver, gold and pink, and is designed for comfort and relaxation contemplation. Her flat in the attic of a townhouse in Kentish Town is compact and bijou, but she's still pleased that she chose the location over space, as she loves the views of the roofscapes over London, her proximity to the Heath, which is a mere 15 minutes walk, and her closeness to the tube station. Zoe is not alone. She looks over with appreciation at the snoozing blonde beauty slumbering beside her. Her dog, Mitch. She smiles watching him having a doggy dream, where he's clearly running. She thinks to herself that maybe the 3-hour binge-watching of Dexter with him was not the best idea, and maybe she should review her late-night viewing choices. But Dexter is oh so good. She looks over and sees the 3/4 finished bottle of Pinot Grigio and the empty packets of Doritos. She sighs, thinking to herself that it would have been so much nicer to have shared that with company. She looks down at her stylish cream Swatch watch. Damn, she says under her breath, it's 2:30 a.m. She has an important defence case the next day and needs to be on top of her game. Hey, gorgeous, time to get moving. She prods Mitch, who stubbornly ignores her cues to go and sleep in his own dog bed in the hallway. She sighs again. Even her latest obsession with watching The Dog Whisperer and his techniques that make training your dog so easy are failing. Her phone bleeps. She grabs it, wondering who can be texting her at this time of night, and is a little disappointed to see that it's from her father, who's a bit of a night owl, and not the hot guy she met in the bar the previous night, with whom she'd felt a strong connection and had high hopes. She picks up her Samsung and reads the message. I hope that bleeding dog is not on your bed and that you're not up and not reading this. You need your kip, young lady. Kiss, 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 Dad. She laughs. Damn, he knows me so well. And here is yet another thing I do that he doesn't approve of. Good job he does love me to bits. She texts him back. Hey, Dad. Couldn't resist a couple of Dexters. You know how good it is. And Mitch is hooked too. I am going to sleep now, honest. She fails to mention anything about Mitch on purpose. Good, he texts back. Now go to sleep and get that mutt off your bed. Dogs do not sleep with humans. She reads this out loud, and Mitch raises his head in what looks like an act of defiance, snorts and curls back up to sleep. Zoe laughs. Night, Dad. Love you. Kiss, 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 she texts back. Love you too, princess, he replies. She looks at Mitch. Okay, it's a late one, so you can stay. Just for tonight. But tomorrow you're back in your own bed, right? Mitch licks her hand and goes back to snoring gently. Robert's alarm goes off. He wakes up abruptly and leaps out of bed. The clock shows that it's now 6:30 a.m. Damn, I'm shattered. He hits the button to turn it off, shakes off his tiredness and throws himself into his morning workout. 10 minutes on the rowing machine, 100 press-ups, 150 sit-ups, 50 bicep curls, 50 lunges, 100 squats with his 20-kilo kettlebell, and finishes off with 30 pull-ups on his pull-up bar. His goal is to get up to 50. No matter how tired he is, he never misses his workout. He sees it as an essential part of his day, especially helpful when dealing with the aftermath of a big night on the town. At the weekends, he swims, steams and saunas, as well as his workout at his local gym. He'd made a vow that he would never let himself go physically, like his father had. And more importantly, he needed to look good in his bespoke Savile Row suits. Even an extra pound made wearing them uncomfortable. Robert is very proud of his impressive appearance. That and his track record with women. It's the only arena in which he can outdo his father. With regards to women, his father Leo was more of a traditionalist, a serial monogamist, never leaving a gap between one marriage and the next. With several high-maintenance mistresses, always younger and more glamorous than the resident wife. Career-wise, his father being the chairman and founder of one of the most successful law firms in New York and the Eastern Seaboard, was still leaps and bounds ahead of him, even though he was doing incredibly well by anyone else's standards. being the son of the legendary Leo Bernstein, lawyer extraordinaire, means he has a lot to live up to. Something he has every intention of doing. Zoe's alarm goes off. She wakes up, hits the snooze button, and goes back to sleep. She remembers the dream she'd been having about the handsome man who, having wooed her, was wrapping her up in cling film. She shudders and sits up in bed. I really must stop watching that before I go to bed. Really not good for my mental health. Mitch whines in agreement. She drags herself out of bed. The clock now shows that it's 7:15 a.m. Damn, I'm shattered. She hits the snooze button to finally turn it off, shakes off her tiredness, and begrudgingly starts her morning yoga sun salutations. She gets past the first round and gives up, making a note to herself that she'll do double the next day, drink less, and have an early night. Something she often promises herself, but hasn't yet achieved. No matter how tired she is, she always manages to do a little bit of something in the morning, though, even if it is just taking Mitch for his quick morning walk to the heath and back. He gets his proper exercise in the day with his beloved dog walker, Olga. Mitch loves Olga. Zoe is not quite so sure and is a little intimidated by her and her relentless and inflexible schedules. But if it works for Mitch, she's happy. At the weekends, she takes Mitch for long walks on the heath herself. It's one of the highlights of her week. No matter what the weather, she'd be there. She'd made a vow that she would never let herself go physically, like her father, whose sedentary lifestyle and his penchant for junk food is taking its toll, leaving him with high blood pressure and being overweight. She also feels that she needs to feel confident about herself in her line of work, especially. Looking after herself is a big part of that. Zoe is very proud of what she's achieved in her work life. What she looks like is not so important. Her weakness is her terrible track record with men. Unlike her parents, who've been together since their early 20s, she has had a string of short and unsuccessful relationships. It had left her disillusioned and wary. Growing up, her father was very traditional. He was a one-man woman, a faithful husband, albeit a little too attached to his job, and had very strong views about women's and men's roles in society. He had never been a fan of her becoming a lawyer, believing that women needed less ambitious jobs. He still saw their place as being in the home, maybe earning a little extra on the side to help the household expenses, but he disapproved of her dream to become a lawyer. However, once she got there, he was secretly proud of her and bragged to all his mates. Only thing was, Zoe never knew this. After the workout, Robert jumps straight into the shower. While he's there, he inspects his reflection in the full-sized mirror. He flexes his muscles, pats his six-pack, and admires what he sees. He sweeps his thick, dark hair back off his face. Not bad for your age, Robert. You're looking good. Looking sharp. To make the most out of his natural attributes, he makes sure he dresses well. In work and outside of it. Eats healthily, following a mainly protein and vegetable diet. Only ever drinking vodka and soda, as tonic has far too much sugar. And champagne. And only partaking of the occasional recreational drugs when the occasion merits it. But the substances aren't really his thing. It's the women that are his weak spot. He loves sex, and luckily, the women love him. He has an endless supply of willing partners and has sex most days. Some of the girls are just one-night hookups. But if they're lucky, they make it to his favourites list. These are the ones he will see again, albeit on a casual basis. His sexual needs are mainly met by a stable supply from the favourites list. Ideally, he rotates them, although it doesn't always work according to plan. And when opportunities present themselves, as they did last night, he's always happy to add to his growing list. After abandoning her workout, Zoe realises she hasn't even got time to take Mitch out, and he looks at her imploringly. Sorry, Mitch, darling. I'll get Olga to come a bit earlier. She shudders as she thinks of the disapproving conversation that's about to happen. She quickly sends her a text, asking her to come at 8 instead of 9 if she can. Then she jumps straight into the shower. While she's there, she inspects her reflection in the bathroom mirror. She prods at her slightly less toned than she thinks they should be stomach muscles. She turns and inspects her butt, which she decides is not as high and as pert as she would like. More squats, she thinks. Actually, more everything. She's just not satisfied with what she sees. She sweeps her light brown hair back off her face. Oh, God, look at those eyebrows. I really need a facial. I think I'm developing jowls. Am I too young for Botox? To make the most out of her imagined imperfections, she makes sure, or tries to make sure, she dresses well, in work mainly. At home, she tends to let herself go and be more casual. She eats healthily most of the time, although she does have a liking for Doritos and all things salty. She drinks white wine, vodka and tonic, the real stuff, none of that sugar-free rubbish. She hates aspartame. Soda, Prosecco and champagne. Zoe is very anti all drugs. She's seen firsthand how they mess people up. Romance is her weak spot. She's always been a helpless romantic. She loves the idea of it, the fantasy of it. She's still waiting to be swept off her feet by her very own Prince Charming. She's not promiscuous, preferring to have a real connection with someone before she sleeps with them. But most of her regrets in life involved sleeping with people too soon. Her sexual needs, when they do arise, are mainly met by her one constant companion, a rabbit. Robert doesn't believe in dating. The only girlfriend he'd ever had was when he was 17 and still at school. Amber was lovely inside and out, and was his best friend, as well as his first love. But at a drunken party, he had strayed with her beautiful blonde best friend, Simone, who threw herself at him. Cheating on Amber was one of his only regrets. To him, it was just a stupid dalliance, and he told Simone this. Unfortunately, her crush on him was more serious than he realised, and in a fit of anger, she confessed all to her friend. Amber was devastated and dropped him immediately and was unyielding despite his many desperate pleas for forgiveness. It took him a long time to get over her. It was at that point in his life he decided that long-term relationships were for dummies and losers. He convinced himself that being stuck with one woman for the rest of his life was ridiculous. Why, he would tell others, would I settle for one woman and boring sex eventually when I can have as many as I want and have no grief and no commitments? Robert no longer has any female friends. In fact, he doesn't really have any proper friends at all. He usually works extremely long hours and spends what's left of his evenings on the prowl with the guys from work. These men are very competitive in everything, but even they can't keep up with him and his reputation for successfully bedding beautiful women. They hang around with him in the hope that some of his success will rub off on them, and often it does. He inspects the shadows under his eyes in the mirror. I must remember to get the girls out earlier when I have a big case. I think I'm going to need a lot of coffee today. Still, this one was worth it. He shivers as he remembers the exploits of the night before and smiles to himself. She definitely needs to go into the favourites list. He picks up his phone and mutters to himself, now, what was her name again? He goes into the bedroom and picks up his trousers and pulls her card out of his pocket. Jasmine Weatherby, travel advisor. Excellent, that could come in quite handy. He opens the favourites list on his phone and puts her on the list. At number 13, he laughs. Lucky for some. Zoe has always believed in love and romance. And getting to know someone through dating, she has been on a lot of dates. Even though they're usually not successful, she never loses hope. She absolutely believes that the one is out there. The dating apps had made things easier, but also more complicated. She now believes that the paid-for ones are best. But a distressing early relationship when she was at school had left a deep scar, which affected her self-worth and her self-image, leaving her always believing that she wasn't quite good enough, and this is why the men she did like never stayed. She knew she might have to sort it out with a professional one day, but for now she was happy enough with her life, her friends, her job, and of course Mitch. Although some of her friends didn't help her uncoupled status, as they were already married and deeply embedded in their own coupledom. She inspects the shadows under her eyes in the mirror as she applies her primer, concealer and foundation. I must remember to get to bed earlier when I have a big case. Oh God, I think I'm going to have a lot of coffee today. Still, Dexter was worth it. She shivers as she remembers his gruesome exploits of the night before and smiles to herself. He's definitely on my favourites list. Should I be worried about that? Her phone buzzes. She picks it up and mutters to herself, oh God, she's here already. She goes to the front door and plasters her best professional smile on her face. As she opens the door, she meets an unsmiling Olga. Thanks, Olga. I do appreciate you coming earlier. Lucky for me that you were available. Olga tuts. Not luck. It is about being prepared. Oh, yes, I am running a little bit late. So I see. I am in a bit of a rush and I haven't fed him either. Can I leave that to you? Of course. Mitch and I will be fine. We are always fine. Zoe looks down to see Mitch gazing adoringly at Olga, with his lead in his mouth. She grabs her coat and her bag and mutters under her breath to Mitch, traitor. Mitch appears to grin, as if he's really enjoying the situation. Robert skillfully manoeuvres his brand new silver sports Jaguar out of the underground car park. David Bowie is playing really loudly. He glances at the case notes on the seat beside him and thinks back to the amount of work he had to put in to make the case watertight. It wasn't easy, and very few people would have wanted to take it on. He knew his client was lying through his teeth and that his wife wasn't really the nightmare he was painting her out to be. But in a divorce case of this size, where there was a huge amount of money at stake, convincing the jury that she was an unfit mother was the only way to go. If she got custody, his client was going to have to fork out a lot of cash, and he really didn't want to do that. He knew he was up to it. He had prepared his client very thoroughly and had given him instructions on what to say and exactly how to behave. He was confident he would win, because he always did. What he looked for principally was not the strength in his client's argument, but the weakness in hers. He would find the weak spot and then go for it, unrelentingly like a Rottweiler. His client's wife, Paula, was partial to a drink or two, and he knew that her consumption had increased due to the stress of the divorce. It wasn't out of hand yet, but there was every chance it could be. His client also drank, but he had carried out Robert's instructions to cut down and get himself more under control. Robert had also gone through all her accusations of violence and abuse and found counter-arguments, claiming that his client had merely been acting in self-defence and that his wife was a liar. Robert felt it was a great pity that the wife didn't have a lover. That always gave the case more weighting in the client's favour. Zoe runs to the station, buttoning her coat as she goes. She rummages in her bag to make sure she has all her papers and then in her pocket to find her Oyster card, keys and phone. She sighs with relief when she finds she has everything. She braces herself when she gets to the entrance of Kentish Town Tube, as it's packed as always. More like a rugby scrum than a commute. She manages to grab a seat and pulls out her notes for the morning's case. It's impossible for her to look at them without being disturbed. She just hopes that she's prepared enough. Suddenly, she gets a nudge from a lady who's demanding she give up her seat for the elderly lady who's just got on. Zoe stands up to give her the seat, only to find that the elderly lady is highly offended. There is nothing wrong with me, young lady. I can stand. I'm not decrepit yet. Zoe finds herself apologising for something she hasn't intended. She sighs. She hopes the day will get better. It's a very tricky case today, and the women she represents are going to need her to pull everything she has out of the bag, if they've any chance of winning. Zoe has spent weeks researching for lesser-known clauses and supporting evidence to bolster her case. It's very politically sensitive, and she wants to avoid the case being used as a political weapon. Morally and ethically, she's totally supportive of this mother and her children, who are facing genital mutilation if she cannot get the protection order put through. Zoe is apprehensive, but confident that she's done enough. She knows that her colleague Letitia will also have done her homework. Together, they are a formidable team. That morning, Zoe and Letitia go through the case meticulously, and by the time they enter the court, they feel invincible. Robert parks his car expertly in the car park near the county court at Southwark. He picks up the notes from the seat beside him and glances into the rearview mirror. Remember, you are the best. You're gonna crush it. He strolls into the courtroom where his client Bill is waiting nervously. He reaches out to shake his hand and notices Bill is sweating. His hand is clammy. "You are ready for this, aren't you?" Robert asks. "Yes, I think so, but, I mean, are you sure this is going to work?" Bill Patterson is 50 years old, hair greying and starting to recede at the front. Just as Robert advised, he's immaculately dressed in a dark blue suit and tie, although the suit is a little tight-fitting around the middle from too many client lunches and dinners. He has the reddish, bloated look of someone who's drunk just a little too much over the years and is starting to show the signs of age. His eyes are cold and steely blue, showing no emotion. It is only the handshake that gives away the emotions happening below the surface. "Damn right it's going to work. Remember, I'm the best." "You want to be with your fees," Bill says, laughing nervously. Robert laughs. "Pay peanuts, you get monkeys. Let's get on with it, shall we?" "Here she is," Bill says. Robert turns and sees Paula, a very attractive petite blonde in her mid-30s. Her head is down, and she looks as though she's been crying. She looks fragile. Robert recalls the snapshot of their relationship. Bill is obviously a serial cheater. His first wife left him when she found out about his infidelities and cost him a fortune. He met Paula just after his first divorce. She was an attractive woman who liked to party. A better-looking, younger version of the first model, and seemed to have everything that was necessary. Not too smart, wanting someone to look after her, and definitely mummy material. At first, everything was great. But when he started to get bored of family life, things took a turn for the worse. She'd started off compliant enough, and gave up everything to be a full-time mother. But when he started behaving badly, she stood her ground, and that's when things got nasty. When the violence started to escalate, she threatened to leave him and take the children with her. He hadn't thought she was capable of it, but life was full of surprises. When she finally did leave and demand a divorce, he had no intention of losing his money all over again. That's when he contacted Robert. His clients relied on his take-no-prisoners attitude to get them what they wanted. He was known for being totally merciless, like an expert surgeon. He particularly liked his motto of being precise, cutting deep, cutting clean, no room for error, and no room for emotion. She looks around and sees her husband. There's a wounded look in her eyes. Robert knows that look. It's the look of a victim. She's already vulnerable, and the signs of the stress she is under are showing all over her face. He knows it won't take much to break her down, and that by the time he's finished, she'll be happy to take any offer they make. Zoe and Letitia are walking out of the courtroom at the end of a long, successful day. Letitia is of dual heritage, half Irish, half Brazilian, a feisty mix. Honey-coloured skin, light green eyes, short dark hair with golden streaks in it. She's striking, her clothes are immaculate, tailored and bordering on sexy. They've been working together for about 3 years and have become very good friends. They respect and admire each other's work. Letitia admires Zoe's zealous and thorough approach, and Zoe appreciates Letitia's ability to solve really complex cases. They're a really good team together. As they leave the building, a woman, their client, runs towards them and hugs them both, with tears rolling down her face. "I can't thank you two enough," she says. "I had no idea that two women, sorry to say, could ever stop him. He told me I'd be wasting my time, and I must admit I was terrified out there. But the way you handled it together was so amazing, and I have so much faith in you. I'm going to be indebted to you for life. You've saved me and my girls. I'm not saying the future's going to be easy. We're going to need a whole new start. But anything is better than what we've had to put up with. I feel really inspired by both of you. And my daughter has decided she wants to be a lawyer like you when she grows up." "You were all so brave standing up to him. So many don't. You should all be really proud of yourselves," Letitia says. "We need more women like you who are empowering themselves." "Samina, when we get this kind of result," Zoe says, "it makes it all worthwhile. It's the reason we do this job. We're here to fight for human rights and justice, so thank you too." They all hug and say their goodbyes. "Thank God that's a few we managed to save," Letitia says. "I know. I wish they'd all work out that way. It's still harrowing, though," Zoe says, sighing. Zoe gets to the counter and orders a skinny latte and Letitia a green tea. She was exceptionally brave. Can you imagine what it would be like to be stuck in a terrible marriage like that, being beaten and abused physically and mentally, and then to have your daughters circumcised and then married off? Just horrendous, Letitia says. I know. And then have your husband threaten to kill you and them if you don't do what he wants, Zoe replies. Thank God we managed to get the injunction and protection order in place to prevent him from coming anywhere near them. As they bring their drinks back to the table and sit down, they both let out a sigh of relief. Thank God it's over. And thank God we had the right judge, Zoe says. Letitia nods. I know. It could have gone either way. I just don't get it at all. Why anyone would want to do that to children. It's just so cruel. But anyway, we did good today. We just have to stay focused on our goal and keep fighting, never giving up. You're absolutely right, Letitia. But sometimes the stuff we hear does get to me. I know, it's hard. Letitia nods. But you've got to realise that when you get emotional and sentimental, the other side starts to sense the weakness in us. And that's when things can go horribly wrong. How do you manage to keep yourself so composed? You always look so completely in control, even in the most appalling circumstances. Letitia starts to explain, but stops when she realises that Zoe is no longer listening to her. In fact, Zoe isn't paying attention to anything anymore. She has a glazed look on her face, appears to have stopped breathing, and her jaw has dropped ever so slightly open. Letitia turns around to see what she's looking at, and sees Robert Bernstein triumphantly entering the room with his smug and self-satisfied looking client at his side. Zoe, she says, are you listening to me? Zoe is very obviously not listening. In fact, Zoe has just started to blush. Letitia sighs. For God's sake, Zoe, that guy is such an arrogant ass. Please don't tell me you fancy him. What? Sorry, did you say something? That guy you are staring at is a complete tosser. Don't even go there. Don't even think about it. Really? I thought he looked quite nice. Zoe continues to stare at Robert, who's now smiling back at her. Letitia sighs even more deeply. Trust me, he has the worst reputation of any man I've ever met. He makes Casanova look like a saint. This does not seem to put Zoe off. Oh shit, he's coming over. Be nice, will you, and stop glaring at him. Robert casually strolls over to the table. Hello, Letitia. How are you, darling? Still crusading for the downtrodden, disenfranchised and disadvantaged, are we? Yes, Robert. Unlike some people, I have a conscience and I'm not just available to the highest bidder. He shrugs. Someone has to do it and it may as well be the best. Anyway, sweetie, it's clients like mine who have money, who keep your charities going. Without their money, they couldn't afford to pay the likes of you, so a little bit of gratitude wouldn't go amiss. He smiles sweetly, then turns his attention to the mesmerised Zoe. Letitia, you haven't introduced me to your very beautiful friend. Robert, Letitia says, this is Zoe. Zoe, this is Robert. Well, Zoe, he leans in close, I need a little help to celebrate tonight. I've just won a very big case. My clients booked a table and ordered a bottle of vintage champagne to be put on ice at the Ivy, and I'm in need of a beautiful companion to share it with. He smiles his best killer smile. And it would be wonderful if that companion was you. Zoe just smiles as if in a trance and nods. He pulls out his card, leaves it on the table in front of her, and winks. See you there at 7. She nods. He turns to Letitia and blows her a kiss. Letitia looks on in disbelief. As soon as he's out of earshot, she kicks Zoe under the table. Zoe, what the hell is wrong with you? What? It's only a bit of dinner. And besides, I want to hear about his case. I could learn something. The only case you're going to get from him is a case of the clap, Letitia replies. Robert goes straight to the gym, congratulating himself on a day well done. In all sorts of ways. He swims, works out, showers, styles his hair, gets dressed into the bespoke suit, shirt and clean underwear that he always keeps ready in a suit bag in the boot of his car, and swaggers his way to the restaurant. Zoe races home and gets ready in record time. She has an hour to do everything, wash her hair, put her makeup on, epilate half her body. She looks solemnly at her chipped toenails and wishes she had time for a pedicure. She still can't believe what's happened. A spontaneous date with a hot, successful, smart lawyer. He has all the ingredients to be her perfect man. As she races around, trying to find something to wear, Mitch watches her with a worrying look. He jumps up onto the bed, and as she pulls out one outfit after the other, he either wags his tail to let her know his approval, or growls to show disapproval. Soon, there are several dresses lined up, and she throws each one on hurriedly to see how they look. She puts on a long grey monsoon dress. "What about this one, Mitch? Too casual?" Mitch growls and nods his head. She tries again. This time, a little black number. "This one? Too over the top?" Mitch growls again. She pulls on one of her favourite dresses, pale grey silk. Simple but classy. Long sleeves, but with just a touch of cleavage showing. Mitch wags his tail and barks approvingly. She throws on a pair of high-heeled silver shoes and grabs the bag to match. She grabs a light grey and silver pashmina and wraps it round her shoulders. She looks at her dog. "How do I look?" He barks, jumps off the bed and runs to the table where her jewellery box is. "Oh, I nearly forgot." She opens the box and pulls out her mother's diamond drop earrings. "These should bring me luck. And God knows I need it. I really don't want to mess this one up." She grabs her well-worn copy of The Laws of Dating from the bedside table, turns to the chapter on first dates, and reads it out loud to herself and Mitch. Number 1. On a first date, arrive a little late so as not to look too keen. Number 2. Under no circumstances ever accept a date at short notice. She looks at Mitch with raised eyebrows. "Okay, I can do the first one. Totally screwed the second. Never mind." Number 3. Make sure you're composed and relaxed. Remember the golden rules of A, B, C. Always be in control. "I'll try. That's not so easy." She holds up a shaky hand. Number 4. Clothes should be not too formal, too sexy or vulgar. And definitely don't try too hard. She smiles at Mitch. "I think I've got that one right, don't you?" He barks enthusiastically. Number 5. Smile, be gracious and give your undivided attention, even if you have no interest in what they're saying. At all times, act like a lady. No swearing, no chewing gum, no spitting, no elbows on the table. She rolls her eyes. Number 6. Keep your legs together at all times. Crossing and uncrossing of legs is not permitted. "Okay," she giggles. Mitch looks unimpressed, so she puts on her best serious face. Number 7. Limit alcohol consumption to one glass only. Well, that's not so easy with a bottle of vintage champagne. Mitch turns his head to one side, one ear dropping. Number 8. Never reveal too much about yourself. Be interested. Ask just the right amount of questions and never, ever discuss past relationships or your relationship with your parents. "Okay, I can do that." She continues to read and Mitch turns his head the other way. Number 9. Under no circumstances ever have sexual relations on the first date. A polite goodbye kiss is acceptable, but no tongues are allowed. Zoe looks at Mitch despairingly. "But it's been so long." Mitch barks up at her. "Okay, okay, I'll be good." She sighs. Number 10. Do not ask when you'll see him again or question him about whether he wants to have a relationship. "That's fine, I can definitely do that." Mitch rolls his eyes. Number 11. Let him pay the bill, you're worth it. No going Dutch. That's a good rule, especially at the restaurant we're going to and with vintage champagne coming to the table. She nods vigorously. And finally, number 12. Be like Cinderella and leave early. Always leave them wanting more. I'm definitely going to do that. Mitch silently agrees it's a good idea to do these laws. and just hopes she can actually stick to them. This time.